Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. There's a new petroleum group in Tulsa, which is a combination of two groups who have been in the state for several years. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked with Chad Warmington about the new Petroleum Alliance.
Let's start with what in the heck is the Petroleum Alliance of Oklahoma? Because I've heard of all these, you know, different petroleum and oil thingies, and this is kind of a combination, right?
It is, okay. Yeah. So it's the combination of the Oklahoma Oil and Gas Association, which got its start in Tulsa in 1919, and the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association, which is about 64 years old. Those two associations have combined forces and joined in a merger to form the Petroleum Alliance of Oklahoma.
So is this largely independent oil producers, or is this, you know, some of the bigger oil producers? Is it the vertical guys or the horizontal guys? How does all that shake out? It's
all of those guys. I mean, you described all of our members. We have the biggest members in the state from, the Devons, the Chesapeakes, the Marathons, to small independent producers as well who have been in the business for years. So we have the full range. What we also have is all the midstream, so the pipeline companies, and then all the refiners in the state are members of ours. And then on top of that, we have all the service companies that service all of those guys as well. So we really represent the entire industry, really from the poking the hole in the ground to the end product getting to the user.
So how did this marriage come about of these two organizations?
I think over the last couple of years, as the industry has really changed and morphed into more of a homogeneous type of production, which is all deep, a horizontal production, there wasn't really a need for an independent group of traditional vertical producers, because there really isn't, frankly, many vertical wells being produced in the state. Really, the modern oil and gas industry is horizontal wells. And our companies, whether they're big, the Devons, the Encanas or whatnot, the Chesapeakes, or smaller companies that you may not have heard of, they're all drilling horizontal wells because that's the modern way to produce oil and natural gas. It's the most efficient, it's the most economical, and it's the preferred way to produce oil and natural gas in the state. So because they're so similar, there really wasn't a need for two trade associations, and we really wanted one unified voice at the Capitol and at the regulatory bodies to say, hey, we represent 95% of all production in the state of Oklahoma, and when we speak, we want to speak as one voice.
All right, so we have seen horizontal wells take a little bit of, some people worry about fracking, for example. Right. Worry about some of the ramifications. And certainly, I don't think anybody can deny that getting rid of the wastewater from oil production is a thing. That's a thing. And right. It's the injection wells, right? That at least our corporation commission has said, could be associated with a lot of the earthquake activity that we had there for a couple of years. So when you go to the Capitol, this trade group is a lobbying group. Right?
Correct. Yeah.
So when you go to the Capitol, are you getting, pushback on that kind of stuff and people asking serious questions about whether Oklahoma has too many eggs in the oil basket? And,
sure, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We were asked a lot of tough questions, particularly over the last 3 or 4 years. But one of the things that's been great to be able to fall back on is earthquakes are down about 80% from 2014-15 levels.
Because they shut off a bunch of the injection wells, which proves the point.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It did. And so the industry worked really closely with the regulators. And really that area of significant seismic activity was in the north central part of the state.
Right.
It's called the Mississippi Lime Play. And that play particularly produced a lot of water alongside the oil and natural gas, sometimes up to 20, 30 barrels of water for every barrel of oil or natural gas that you got. And so when the commission came in and correlated it with disposal wells and reduced the number of disposal wells and the volume of disposal wells, earthquakes came down. So I think we definitely realized that the amount of production, and particularly the produced water that was being put in the ground, was having an impact on earthquakes. So fortunately for Oklahoma, production actually moved further west into what's called the scoop and the stack. And there, the water cut, or the water that comes up alongside the oil and natural gas, was only about a 1-to-1 ratio. So significantly less water to have to dispose of. And on top of that, the water was better quality. So we're able to recycle and reuse quite a bit of that. So the disposal issue just isn't an issue in the scoop and the stack. And that's a really lucky thing for Oklahoma, because if not, we would have been in a serious position where we wouldn't have been able to produce much oil and natural gas here.
Kind of sucks for the guys in central Oklahoma, though, because but I do think that the technology, because obviously the first thing you do is the easy thing. Oh, we'll just stick it back in the ground. And then when you figure out, well, that's not going to work, that's when, you know, the scientists and the technicians, everybody get together and go, okay, we need a different solution. Do you know, have there been any developments along those lines?
Yeah, in terms of what to do with that salt
with
water.
With that wastewater.
The problem with the water in the Mississippi lime is about 6 times saltier than seawater. And so it makes it very uneconomical and frankly not very environmentally responsible to try to remove the salt, because now you've got a salt problem. So you've got a water issue, but now you've got a salt problem. And so really disposing of it in those deep underground formations is really the best, most environmentally responsible way to deal with that water. It's ancient seawater. And so the removal of that salt would take so much tremendous amounts of energy, it would be pretty cost prohibitive. But then what do you do with all this salt that you have? And so really from an environmental standpoint, working with the Corporation Commission, the preferred method is disposal. We just have to do it in amounts that don't trigger earthquakes. And that's what the Corporation Commission's been able to do. Limit the disposal, but yet still maintain production. There's still production in the Mississippi line. There's just not a lot of new production being added because of the additional cost of disposal. But again, luckily for Oklahoma and the western part of the state and the scoop and the stack and then the south central, southwestern part of the state, again, you don't have that problem. So we don't have disposal issues there because there's just so much less water to dispose of. And so the water you do dispose of isn't causing any trouble.
That's really interesting. So they're tapping into literally into ancient ocean water.
Correct.
That's fascinating. All right. So we're at a time politically in this country where some people are talking about getting rid of all carbon-based energy sources, period. And at the same time, the United States, for the first time ever, has become a net exporter of petroleum products. Kind of a mixed blessing. So, I mean, do you feel like the future of this industry is strong? I can't imagine you'd say no, but tell me why you think it is.
Well, I think the future is very bright for the industry, particularly because of, look, you nailed it. We're a net energy exporter, and that we didn't even think that was possible 10 years ago. So not only is the United States the largest producer, we're also the largest exporter of crude and natural gas products. That gives us a significant ability to be impactful from a geopolitical standpoint in the world. A lot of countries around the world now depend on the oil and natural gas we produce because they can buy it from a friendly nation. So that gives stability for the world because they've got the United States supplying their energy needs. But at the end of the day, if you look at just the energy demands of the country or the world for that matter, there is no green technology. There is no other source of energy that can deliver the amount of energy that oil and natural gas can. Those green technologies are going to be great and they're going to be a nice supplement to it, but they really don't work unless you have natural gas really particularly alongside of it to provide all the energy that this country needs and, frankly, this world needs. So when you look at it just from an energy demand standpoint, oil and natural gas isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
So it is a resource, though, that gets used up. I don't know how long it's going to take, but with some of the technologies that you were talking about, the horizontal drilling and everything, we're finding and getting oil out that we never dreamed of even being able to get to. You know, like you said, a few years ago.
Right.
We're getting to it now.
Yeah.
But this too shall pass. And but do you think there's enough for what, a century, 1,000 years, 5,000 years?
Yeah, the last estimates we saw in terms of natural gas is we got a 200 or 300 year supply of natural gas. And what's interesting is we're finding more and more of it. And that's why if you look at the price of natural gas, it's reaching kind of record lows right now. I think earlier in the year, maybe the beginning of the year, we hit around a $4 market price. It's down to just over $2. Most of that's being driven by supply. We have a ton of natural gas in this country, and that's even taken off up in New York and Pennsylvania. New York has banned hydraulic fracturing, so they really can't add any new production because you have to hydraulically fracture these wells. Massive supplies of natural gas up there, and so it's a demand issue, but we're more than meeting it. And there's tons of natural gas in Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado that's able to offset what the East Coast, frankly, isn't willing to produce. Which is good for Oklahoma, but the prices have been really bad, and it's really difficult to make money producing natural gas. That's why in Oklahoma, in the Permian Basin, out in New Mexico and Texas, they're really focused on oil because that's where they get the rate of return.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that super cheap natural gas will be the final nail in the coffin of coal.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up coal. You know, for all this talk about the Green New Deal and for greenhouse gas emissions and these Earth First policies being put forth, you know, I read a recent statistic that said if China would just convert half of their coal plants to natural gas that's produced in the United States or anywhere else, it would cut greenhouse gas emissions by about 80%. So if we really want to solve this global warming issue and this greenhouse gas issue, remove coal plants from China, have it burn clean-burning Oklahoma-made oil and natural gas, particularly natural gas, and you would really solve those issues. Natural gas is a real clean-burning fossil fuel, and all the studies have shown that if you were to reduce coal, maintain natural gas, and be vigilant in terms of methane emissions, fugitive methane emissions in the production, which the industry is really good at, it's a net benefit to the country, to the nation, to the world, frankly. And so, you know, it's funny. I think of all the these money, you know, $93 trillion, I think, was what the new Green Deal wants to, you know, is the purported cost of it. But it doesn't really absolutely help the United States because we're a world leader in energy production. And natural gas is the key to that economic security and to the environmental benefits that they're looking to get out of it. So, I think at the end of the day, science is going to win out. And frankly, the finances are going to win out. And natural gas is clean burning and cheap, easy to move it all around the world. It's going to be here for a while.
So let's talk about the price of oil for a minute, because when Oklahoma sees oil prices go down, Oklahoma has problems. So we're going back to that too many eggs in the oil basket thing. Right now, or at least for the last, seems like maybe year, it's been that upper 50s, lower 60s, talking, you know, West Texas
yep.
benchmark type stuff.
Right.
But, you know, oil prices have kind of stabilized.
Right.
In that, now, is that a sweet spot or, and do you see prices kind of staying in that general area? I guess I'm asking you to look in your crystal ball and tell
sure.
me, are we going to have another economic meltdown because
yeah.
oil prices go off the cliff in the
yeah.
near future?
Well, I think what you're going to see is exactly what you described, is a smaller trading band in terms of the price of oil, natural gas, and particularly oil was what we're talking about. Because of, again, our success in finding it and our ability to produce it, we don't have as many supply concerns. So when Iran had all the issues last week and they shot down the drone and oil jumped 5%, that was a more of a modest move. 5% still a big move.
It's
but it isn't
kind
like
of a blip compared to
compared to what we're used to seeing. You know, we'd see $110 oil, and I don't know that we'll ever see that again. It's just from a supply standpoint,
and how
we have
tons
of it.
How did that happen? You know, I'm still a little fuzzy on how did we go from 110 to 30?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Well, part of it was a recessionary issue globally. And then the other part of it was just technology now has come online that we're able to produce so much more of it. So our proven reserves of oil are significantly higher than they were 10, 15 years ago. And that's because of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. You know, we in Oklahoma, we were talking not even 10 years ago about peak oil and whether or not Oklahoma's best days in terms of oil production were behind it. We didn't realize that there was significant recoverable assets that we just hadn't figured out how to tap them yet. And again, the combination of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing has revolutionized the oil and natural gas industry. And it's particularly in shale formations where we found that oil that we didn't really think was there. And we didn't think that we were capable of producing it. So now you've got plenty of supply. You've got a thirsty, frankly, economy, a world economy that really does run on oil and natural gas. And Oklahoma's been able to significantly benefit from that.
And now there's a new organization that's going to keep it in top of mind for our lawmakers. But what about the public? What is your goal for, you know, Joe Sixpack in Oklahoma, who hasn't worked a day in his life in the oil industry. Why should he care that you exist?
Well, I think we should care because, look, Oklahoma, 25% of all state revenue, 1 in 5 jobs, over $300 million directly to education comes just from revenues produced by the oil and natural gas industry. So I like to say when oil and gas does well, Oklahoma does well. And so Joe Sixpack or frankly, a teacher in any public school in the state of Oklahoma, we need to be working together. You know, there was this false kind of narrative that got perpetrated over the last few years that somehow education and oil and gas couldn't coexist. And I don't think anything could really be further from the truth. One, you know, the product that they're producing in terms of a talented STEM-educated workforce is who are going to work in our industry. We need those kids to be—
I was
going to
say, I'll bet you're a big STEM fan.
Big STEM. Look at the modern oil and gas industry. It's very technologically savvy. So yeah. One, we need a really strong education system. How we get it is we properly pay teachers and we properly fund it. Where does that money come from? 25% of all state revenues come from this industry. So we've touched on a little bit before about the diversification of Oklahoma's economy. It frankly hasn't happened. We're probably more dependent on oil and natural gas than we ever have been. So we need to make sure we have policies that balance the environmental and economic benefits of oil and natural gas, because that revenue pays for, you know, core services across state government. So that's why we think when we want to remind, and part of our mission of the Petroleum Alliance of Oklahoma is to say, hey, look, we're in this together. When we do well, you do well. We're going to do it responsibly. We've got a great regulatory body that makes sure we do. We've got a legislature and a governor who understand our importance. And I think we're now taxed right. We've got a good regulatory framework. And if prices remain strong, I think the oil and gas industry in Oklahoma will be here for a long time. And when it does well, the state of Oklahoma does well. And that's a winner for everybody.
So let's talk about the gross production tax for a second, because there has been a lot of discussion about that, or especially during the economic downturn, was like, well, you know, they're getting the sweetest deal in Oklahoma of any state in the country. Is that still true?
No, yeah. It wasn't true at the time, and it's not true now. So we did a study, and we've had others do some studies, 16 major oil and gas producing states, and to try to find out where Oklahoma ranked in terms of the tax burden. Everyone wanted to focus on the gross production tax, mm-hmm. but what we kept reminding everybody is, well, gross production tax revenue is only really about a fifth of the total tax revenue that the state benefits from oil and natural gas development. It's a nice benefit, but it's a long tail benefit that lasts, you know, after the initial surge of capital from drilling wells. And so what we were reminding legislators is, hey, you don't want to discourage capital from coming here, because capital means rigs. Rigs are running. Those throw off a ton of economic benefits because of the taxes that they pay. The benefit of the gross production tax lasts for years, but again, it's only one portion of it. So now we're taxed at around a little bit over 5% average. It's 5% for the first 3 years and then 7% for the life of the well. And that places us about third of the top five oil and gas producing states in terms of the tax burden.
And it was 4 and 7, right? It was 4%.
It started out for deep horizontal wells, 1%, and then the legislature moved it to 2%. So it was 1% for 48 months. Then they moved it to 2% for 48 months, and now it's 5% for 36 months.
But nobody's drilling the deep.
It's for horizontal wells
pretty
as well.
Cool.
The legislature, I think, did a really smart thing. When they went in, they said, look, we're not going to pick winners and losers. We're going to have a tax rate that if you drill a well in Oklahoma, if it's a vertical well, a horizontal well, a directional well, it's 5%. And so they just made it across the board and said, if you're going to drill a well, we're going to give you a little bit of an incentive for 5% for 36 months. And then it's going to be 7%, which has always been our historic tax rate. Mm-hmm. And so I think they made a good decision. I think that decision has cost us some capital, but I think the state has benefited from it. As long as prices remain consistent, and if our rock can be competitive, and our rock is tough to compete against, frankly, the Permian Basin and the Bakken in North Dakota and the Eagle Ford Shale in Texas are much better plays because they're more oily and it's more oil on top of it. So they get higher production and they get a bigger percentage of their production is oil versus natural gas. So Oklahoma's in a tough spot. We got to be competitive. But I think with the tax rate that we have, with the regulatory environment that we have, and if we can keep prices like we talked about in this $50 to $60 range, it could be a nice long run for oil and gas industry in Oklahoma. And, you know, as an Oklahoman, we're used to seeing these wild spikes. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, some stability would be nice. If we could get a 10 or 15 year run of some stability, that would be really good for
us. Can't argue with that. Don't think there's an elected official in the state that would argue with that. Stability is always helpful.
Chad Warmington with the Petroleum Alliance. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.